This episode of the Locked On Sabres podcast is brought to you by Locker Room. Download the Locker Room app from the iOS App Store and find one of our Locked On rooms. Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports.
Your Locked On NHL, your daily podcast on the National Hockey League. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is the Locked On NHL podcast, your Friday edition of the show. Joe DiBiase, joined by Gil Martin. Gil, thanks for being on, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Gil from Locked On Islanders, Tom Gazzola's final episode was last Friday. So if you missed that, me and Tom kind of just went over a lot of the stuff, the fun, best moments from our last 2 years doing the show. But we're looking ahead, and nice to have Gil on the podcast today, especially. Gil, it's good timing because, I mean, there's only four teams left in the league. And as someone that's covering the Buffalo Sabres, I've been in offseason mode for, I mean, if you count last offseason, which lasted, what, 9 months? I've been in offseason mode for like 12 of the last 16 months.
Yeah, I can understand. But look, hopefully better times are coming for your Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah, I'm not super optimistic, but there, one can hope. One can hope at least. And we'll talk a little bit about the Sabres later, because the biggest story going around on, in the league that is not the playoffs is absolutely the Jack Eichel trade market heating up. And as we start to narrow in on who might be in on that deal, what it might look like, and the timing that it could occur, we'll get to that in the back half of today's episode. We'll start with the playoffs, but before we get to that, a couple of news items on the NHL awards. We had Rod Brind'Amour come away with the Jack Adams Award on the same day that he signs an extension. I wasn't surprised really in either one, Gil. Maybe I was a little more surprised on the Jack Adams Award, but I was, even though it had lasted this long, I was still believing that he was going to re-sign in Carolina.
Yeah, I thought he would too. And you know, when you consider what happened with his team this year and how well they did, they surprised a lot of people. I'm not shocked he wins the award either.
Yeah, me neither. The only one hesitation I always had was that just seems to be the owner everyone tries to take advantage of monetarily. And I think back to, well, obviously this is the guy, Tom Dundon, who lost $70 million in the AAF, the upstart spring football league that went defunct 2 years ago. And what's the one offer sheet we've seen in the last 10 years? It was Montreal offer sheeting Sebastian Aho in Carolina. And how did they try to pry him away? They didn't do it with the cap hit. They did it by front loading his contract with $12 million in the first couple months, thinking that Tom Dundon and the Hurricanes wouldn't be able to pay that. So the one hesitation I had was this might be the team that wants to go cheap with their head coach, and that might cause him to hit the open market. But they were able to get it done, and he sticks in Carolina and he wins the Jack Adams Award. The other award that we had nominations for yesterday was the Jim Gregory General Manager of the Year Award, which we had not talked about in this podcast yet. Marc Bergevin from Montreal, Lou Lamoriello from your Islanders, Bill Zito from the Florida Panthers. Any front runner you think for this one early on?
I always get the feeling when it comes to these votes that if you're a Canadian-based team, there is an advantage, and I think Marc Bergevin is probably going to be the favorite.
I think that's got to be right. I think there's a case to be made for Lou Lamoriello, though. I mean, the deadline deals that he made for Kyle Palmieri and Travis Zajac, the build of that team. Gil, we've been talking about the Islanders almost as kind of a blueprint for the Sabres getting back on the map in the next couple of years. And the biggest, obviously, similarity there would be that the Islanders lost their franchise number one center in John Tavares, and the Sabres are probably about to lose their franchise number one center in Jack Eichel. And they are kind of just an example of, okay, it doesn't have to be the end of the world. But Lamoriello has really been the one, I think, that has kind of crafted this roster into what it is today.
Yeah, I mean, you also have to give a little bit of credit to his predecessor, Garth Snow, because a lot of the draft picks were his. Mm-hmm. But as far as free agent signings and trades, you know, the last two deadlines, you add J.G. Pageau and Andy Green last year. This year, you mentioned Zajac and Palmieri. And these deals worked out very, very well for the team come playoff time each year.
I think actually, you know what? I just looked up the past winners, though. I feel like the way these awards tend to go, it's very hard to win twice in a row. And Lamoriello won this award last year. Mm-hmm. So I might agree with you that Bergevin is probably the favorite, especially with that Canadian factor in there as well. So let's talk about the playoffs. Let's talk about your Islanders. Let's talk about the Lightning, who took a 2-1 series lead last night over New York. And I thought the Islanders played fairly well in that game. They were outshot in the game. The more scoring chances were in Tampa's favor, but that's just kind of how I think the Islanders are going to have to win. They're most of the time going, that's the way it's going to go, just how overwhelming Tampa is offensively. But I think the Islanders are hanging in there, and I would not discount that they could still come back and win this series, even though our partners at BetOnline have them at a massive underdog at plus 395 to come back and win this series, which is a much bigger underdog than Montreal is right now in their series with Vegas. I don't know. How do you see this series going? I think I had Lightning in 7 when I first picked it, and I think I would want to stick with that pick.
I had the same pick, actually. And yeah, I mean, look, the fact of the matter is, through 3 games, all 3 have been close. I mean, the Islanders' worst game was game 2. They lost 4-2, but, you know, with 10.5 minutes to go, they were down by 2 goals, pulled the goalie with about 3 minutes left. And the other 2 games were 1-goal games. So it's been very much neck and neck. The Islanders, you know, last night, I think they did a good job defensively of limiting Tampa Bay's chances. And you look at the shots on goal, Kucherov had 0, Palat had 1, Stamkos had 1. You're limiting the chances of, you know, their top players. But offensively, Tampa Bay did a good job of shutting the Islanders down. And the Islanders never consistently established that forecheck that they rely on so much to force mistakes from the other team. It happened for 5-10 minutes in mostly later in the second period, but it didn't happen consistently enough.
Yeah. And I actually should have looked at the deeper numbers before I had just said that Tampa had the better scoring chances. I'm gonna edit that out. Because I looked at natural stat trick while you're just talking there, and the Islanders actually had 14 high danger scoring chances to the Lightning 6. I think a lot of maybe what my instinct was there is the end of the game. They had 0 shots on goal when they pulled the goalie. And it just didn't seem like they can get all that close once Varlamov had gone to the bench. And their one goal was just, I mean, that might be the most boneheaded goal of the playoffs so far. Eric Cernak trying to put it into his own goaltender. I mean, what is he doing there?
Yeah, that was a little crazy play. But I got to give a lot of credit to Cal Clutterbuck and that identity line, because that was a gritty goal for the Islanders. They worked hard for that one.
Yeah. How much credit does that line get, by the way? Because I think the one thing that, like, Sabres Twitter is funny, and NHL Twitter is funny, where there's kind of two sides of the fence. You've got your old school hockey fans and, like, your old school hockey writers, and then you've got a lot of these analytical driven guys that are coming up. Usually they're younger guys. And I think the Islanders have kind of been an interesting fight between the two sides. It's okay, well, what is really driving them? What is making them good? Is it these puck moving defensemen that they have? Because they have a very good blue line when it comes to passing the puck, which to me is what you would want as the number one quality on a blue line in today's NHL. And they do have skilled players up front. It's not like they're bereft of talent. But then you also hear other guys that are like, well, what really drives the show? It's that identity line. Like, they are the character of the team. They are kind of the energy of the team. And that's not to disparage them as not being a good line, because they get their chances. You know, like, don't just think they're blocking shots and hitting people. Like, they do get their chances, especially with Casey Cizikas and Cal Clutterbuck. But how much credit, you being a little closer to the team, does that line really get for their success?
They get a good amount of credit. They set the emotional tone for the team. And, you know, when they're out there forechecking and hitting people, you know, they sort of get the team inspired and set the tone for how they want to play. And if you go back to last night's game, you know, they provided a lot of offense. They had 7 shots on goal between Cizikas, Martin, and Clutterbuck, which is, you know, more than the second line, the Bevilier, Nelson, and Bailey line had. So, you know, that there's a reason that Barry Trotz very often starts every period with that identity line, because they really do set the tone. They get the crowd involved at home games, and they, you know, emotionally help this team do what they need to do.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about a little bit of the other series between Vegas and Montreal. I mentioned the odds a little bit earlier that Montreal is a plus 270 underdog to win the series now at Bet Online, and Vegas is plus 375. You have game three coming your way tonight at 8 o'clock Eastern time at Montreal. There'll be limited fans in attendance in Montreal, a little bit of a different vibe as you had full houses at really all these other arenas. I was surprised Montreal got here in the first place. I know we haven't spoken yet about them. Me, Tom, and my Tuesday host, Mike DiStefano, have almost been blown away that they've gotten this far. Especially the way they did it against Winnipeg. I mean, they didn't just sweep Winnipeg. Like, they just smoked them. They were greater scoring chances up and down the ice action, four lines they can roll, just scoring goals. I think Vegas is pretty overwhelming in this series. And what was my original pick? I think I had Vegas in six. I think I would stick with that as well. So how have you seen Montreal's playoff run thus far and where they currently stand today, 1-1?
Surprised by the offense that they've provided. Didn't think they had enough depth in scoring, at least consistently, to get where they are. But when you look at their roster, they have a pretty decent mix of younger players and older players. And then, of course, at the very least, you know, Carey Price is the backbone of this team, and he really makes a big difference in keeping them in every game, even if they're being outplayed.
That really is maybe my biggest surprise. I maybe shouldn't be too surprised, because this is 2 years in a row where Carey Price has kind of flipped the switch when it gets to playoff time. But a reason I was hesitant to just assume he was a goalie that could carry them through the playoffs is he was near the bottom of the league this year at 5-on-5 save percentage. But it's like with him, 2 years in a row, it just doesn't matter, because once it counts, he turns it on. So he's got to be, you got to have that clutch, attached to Carey Price at this point. What do you want to see in the Stanley Cup final, by the way? I'm assuming you want to see the Islanders make it through.
Yeah, obviously.
I think that's safe to assume. Does any part of you, not even just for like on ice reasons, kind of want to see Montreal just because it's a Stanley Cup final that you can't get any other year?
Yeah, that's true. That would be a Stanley Cup final you couldn't get any other year. I mean, look, Montreal has not won a Stanley Cup since 1993. No Canadian-based team has won a Stanley Cup since 1993. You know, when I'm old enough to remember when the Canadians won four straight Stanley Cups in the late 70s, and it seemed like almost their right to be in the Stanley Cup final almost every year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to me, the traditionalist in me would like to see Montreal get there, and an Islanders Canadiens series would be very, very interesting. Yeah. As far as pure offense and pure maybe entertainment value, however, Tampa Bay and Vegas would probably be pure hockey, you know, I want to watch this game standpoint. If I take my own emotions out of it, that might be the most attractive matchup.
I think I agree with that in terms of just like the entertainment value, especially from like a casual observer's perspective.
Right.
I think that's the one, because that could be high flying. That could be up and down the ice, back and forth, trading goals. And when I think of Montreal and the New York Islanders, I think I've been very impressed with both teams, especially the Islanders this playoffs, their ability to really turn it on. And especially when they're down, have the ability to come back, when they have to play that offensive card, that they're able to do it. The Islanders with Barzal and Palmieri and Brock Nelson, and Montreal just running four lines deep. Like, they've got guys who scored 20 goals, like Paul Byron, on their fourth line. And but should be here, though. When those teams get ahead, man, they can just smother you and just lock that game down into a defensive slugfest. Like, when they get ahead, that typically happens, I think, with both of those teams. And to their credit, like, it's right to do that if you're them, because that's their path to winning. But, man, I just wouldn't want to be looking at 2-1 games all the time, I think, in the finals. So part of me wants to see it because it would be odd and it would be unique that you can't really see anymore in the Stanley Cup final. But I think the stronger part of me wants to see Vegas and Tampa, just to see, you know, those two juggernauts just going back and forth. But they're both heavy favorites. We'll see if they get there. By the way, the Islanders and the Canadiens have the third and fourth longest droughts to making the Stanley Cup final. there are two teams that have had a longer time span between now and when they last made the Stanley Cup final. The Toronto Maple Leafs are first.
Right.
67, so 53 seasons. Do you think you can grab – do you think you can name the other one here with only giving a second thought here? It's a tough one.
Yeah.
They've relocated. I'll give you that. That's your hint. They've relocated. That's
my hint. No, it wouldn't be them. It's not the Avalanche.
No, the Avalanche, that's not a bad guess, though. They're at 19 seasons, which is, I think, sixth. Yeah. Second is the Arizona Coyotes.
Gotcha.
At 41 seasons, which would obviously include the Winnipeg Jets.
Right, the original Winnipeg Jets.
Right, 1980, their inception to now, 41 seasons. So Islanders and Canadiens, they could both snap that this playoffs.
Wait, wait. All right. Them winning the Avco Cup in the WHA doesn't count?
I don't think so. At least, and I'm also reading this off Wikipedia, which I guess isn't the strongest source, but they don't include that, no.
Fair enough.
All right, we'll take a timeout here in the Locked On NHL podcast. Joe DiBiase from Locked On Sabres, Gil Martin from Locked On Islanders. We talked a lot about Gil's team there, the Islanders, because obviously the playoffs. We come back, we'll talk about the Sabres and potential trade partners for Jack Eichel, as that trade market seems to be heating up. So that's next here on the Locked On NHL podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
If you have not tried a Built Bar yet, I strongly encourage you to do so as somebody that did not eat protein bars because of the taste. And as somebody, am I a candy snob? Am I an aficionado? I don't know. I eat a lot, not as much anymore. Growing up, a lot of candy bars. And I'm telling you, Built Bar is a candy bar. It's not. It tastes like one, though. You have 18 amazing flavors to pick from, including 6 new flavors: caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. If you go for the coconut almond puff flavor, that is my favorite. And I'm not even a coconut guy, but it's like eating a Mallow cup. That's how good it is. Built Bars are also great for the healthy conscious guy. You can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. They're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, and great for keto diets. For example, the peanut butter flavor, 19 grams of protein, 180 calories, only 5 grams of sugar, and only 5 grams net carbs. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKED15, and you will get 15% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com.
Welcome back to the Locked On NHL podcast, your Friday edition of the show. Joe DiBiase from Locked On Sabres, at Sneaky Joe Sports on Twitter. Gil Martin from Locked On Islanders, at Ice Wars NYR versus NYI. That is a book you wrote, right? By the way,
Ice Wars is a book I wrote on the history of the Islanders and Rangers rivalry. So okay. Yeah, that was a fun one to do.
So we didn't do a ton of introductions there at the front of the podcast, but like what kind of drove you to write about that? I know that probably has got to be the biggest rivalry for the Islanders, right?
Yeah, by far. And by far, you know, for me growing up on Long Island, that was the centerpiece of how I came to really love hockey, and the intensity and the memories of some of those great playoff games. You know, those two teams met in the playoffs in 1975, 79, 81, 2, 3, 4, 9, 1990, and 1994. And it was just some of the best hockey I've ever seen.
I, as someone living in Buffalo, we always get MSG. So there were like Rangers and Islanders documentaries always on when I was growing up. And oh, was it the 80s? There was some series in the 80s, or maybe it happened a lot, where Islander fans would be chanting 1940 at the Ranger fans before they won the Stanley Cup in 94. And I always thought that was really funny. So I know a little bit about it, but maybe I'll have to get the book to learn more about it. And by the way, don't feel bad. If you could tell, I feel like both of us are kind of losing our voices here. See, like right there, couldn't even make it through that sentence. Allergies, man, are just crushing me right now. Yeah. So. Yeah, we'll make it through, though. And actually, you probably didn't even – I didn't even say that because this is a podcast. We're probably going to edit a lot of that out. So, yeah. We'll switch gears here a little bit from the playoffs, and we'll go to the trade market, a little bit more off-season talk in Jack Eichel. And part of the reason is Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet has kind of been the one dropping a lot of these nuggets. But one from Pierre LeBrun of The Athletic was, nobody said – that an Eichel trade had to wait until the end of the postseason. And I think he's kind of hinting there that, hey, this thing could get done before the end of the Stanley Cup final. And the way it sounds around here is I would guess it is going to be done before the end of the Stanley Cup final, maybe within the next week. And to me, what that would say, the only thing that that specifically would say is none of the teams that are currently in the final would be in on Jack Eichel, because if they were, then I'd imagine the Sabres would wait to see what they would have to offer. So no Islanders, no Vegas, no Montreal, and no Tampa Bay. Obviously Tampa Bay. I mean, they're $20 million over the cap already. So that kind of brings us to what Elliot Friedman had to say yesterday a lot on my radio station at WGR in Buffalo, New York, that the Ducks, they are in on Jack Eichel, that he doesn't know if they'd be willing to include Trevor Zegras, which has kind of been the big name that Sabre fans want to see the Sabres acquire, and that a team in the East would have to pay a big premium because the Sabres want to send Eichel west. And I'll start with a team that was considered the favorite. In fact, I've mentioned BetOnline a couple of times. A couple months ago, they had Jack Eichel trade odds listed on their website, and the favorite was the New York Rangers, who we talked about at the beginning of the segment. And they've kind of been the team mentioned with Eichel for like 12 months. Whenever an Eichel trade has come up, it's always Rangers, Rangers, Rangers. Always the first team that gets brought up. And I think now that we have this report that the Sabres want to send him west, and that if you're the Rangers, you want him, you got to spend a premium. And to combine that with another report from about a month ago that the Islanders were not willing to move Alexis Lafreniere to the Sabres in an Eichel deal last offseason. I'm going to equate those two things into meaning that the Rangers are out on Jack Eichel, because when they go down to their second best offer, which would be what? Kaapo Kakko and the 16th overall pick and maybe Keandre Miller, maybe they're giving up one of their other really good prospects. To me, you're eliminating the possibility that you can outbid these teams in the West, let alone pay a premium. And the draft pick is part of that. You pick 16th. I mean, if I'm Buffalo, why am I talking to you? I'm going to go talk to Anaheim, who's got the third pick. I'm going to go talk to Columbus, who's got the fifth pick. I'm going to go talk to LA, who's got the eighth pick. So to me, the way I've boiled it down is unless the Rangers are willing to trade Lafreniere in an Eichel deal, I think they're out. So how does that sound to you? Does the logic sound right? And I mean, probably happy for you that the Rangers would not be getting Eichel.
The logic sounds right. The only difference may be, you know, where someone's opening offer is versus when the bidding goes up and
sure,
you know, the moment of truth comes, maybe things change a little bit, but the logic sounds very sound. And if I'm Buffalo, yeah, I want him out west if possible. And I want to talk to a team that has a lottery pick. So, yeah, you know, that would make the most sense. But of course, obviously, you know, prospects are worth something as well, and they want highly regarded ones. And, yep, you know, will the Ducks include, you know, Zegras in a trade? That's also a question that has to be answered.
It definitely is, because they weren't willing to put him in a deal for Pierre-Luc Dubois. I know Dubois and Eichel are very different levels of players. At least in my eyes, they are. But so that could mean that they would trade Zegras in an Eichel deal. Maybe they still wouldn't. And I think that's the tough part about the Eichel trade right now. And that's actually what's got me worried about an Eichel trade, because he does have 5 years left on his deal. And man, if you're the Sabres, like, this trade is going to define your franchise for the next 5 to 10 years, just because of the level of talent that you're trading and the fact that he is only 24 years old and still on a 5-year deal. So like, Gil, one thing we've been going back and forth on that I'd love to get your opinion on is, like, should the Sabres be willing to have him still on the roster opening night of next season? My answer to that has always been yes, because if you look back at their last major trade they made with Ryan O'Reilly, which has become like a punchline of a trade since they made it, they were rushed. They wanted him off the team by July 1st because they didn't want to pay him his $7 million roster signing bonus. So they rushed the trade. They just took whatever was best out there on the market. And it really set them back for multiple years because of what they got. And to me, I don't want the Sabres to feel rushed. I don't want the Sabres to feel like they have to make this deal before the start of the year. But because of all that's gone on with his injury and the tension between Eichel and the franchise, I don't know, man. Like, I'm worried that they do feel that they have to make this trade now.
you don't want to rush it. That's the bottom line. You want to do it right. If this is something that is going to change the course of your franchise, the talent level on your team, look, you're trading away, you know, your most talented young player, and you don't want to do that lightly. The flip side of that is that you cannot allow Eichel to become a cancer in the locker room. If he's on your team, he has to be committed to being a good teammate and putting in the effort, because if he, you know, stays on the roster but is unhappy and doesn't play well with others, so to speak, and isn't putting his heart and soul into it, that'll drag down the team as well, and you'll have nothing to show for it, and his trade value would go down because he would be perceived around the league as somebody who, you know, can be indifferent at times, and you can't have that in the league. So it's a fine line that the Sabres have to walk, but yes, I think they have to be willing to be patient and wait it out if necessary. And even if he holds out and says, you know what, you're not trading me, I'm not showing up, maybe it's in their best interest to say, okay, well, until we get the right offer, you'll sit.
Yeah, I think that's exactly how they should treat it. I know that's a tough sell, or it's not a tough sell. It's a hard thing to do for a franchise to have that kind of hanging over your head. But again, because it's such a talented player, and it's such an important player in your franchise, and it's the most valuable piece in your entire franchise, that I think you have to play it that way. The one guy I thought of while you were talking there too is Pierre-Luc Dubois in Columbus. I mean, he was clearly unhappy. They kept playing him, and then you had that embarrassing shift that happened at the beginning of the season, and I don't think you want any version of that happening with Eichel. Especially, it's compounded that Eichel's the captain of the team, and that this team is going very young next season. So I get that you would not want to have that distraction, but I still think the value of the trade should outweigh that. So that's where I am on it. You can get more, of course, on the Eichel deal at Locked On Sabres. No way, by the way, right? The Sabres could squeeze Barzell out of New York, right? That's definitely a no. Just want to make sure.
Yeah, pretty sure that's not happening.
Okay. I was pretty sure. I just wanted to throw that your way just to make sure. Because he is a guy we've talked about. And really part of that is because I love Matthew Barzell. And if I'm correct, maybe I'm not remembering this right, was there any tension between him and the Islanders last offseason contract-wise? Or am I thinking of someone else?
I mean, it did take a little longer to sign him. He missed the first week of training camp.
Oh, that's right.
But negotiations were always very cordial. It always was assumed by people following the Islanders that the deal would get done. It was just a question of when.
Okay, I see. And he's got one more year after this year on his deal, and then he's an RFA. So he's cost controlled. They can retain his rights really for a while here. Yes. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us today on the podcast. Gil, thanks for coming on, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. It was fun.
Be sure to check out his podcast, Locked On Islanders, if you want plenty more on the Islanders and Lightning series, which is ongoing right now. You'll have game 4 tomorrow. I'm all over the place in these games. Game 4 tomorrow between the Islanders and the Lightning. And I will talk to you again on this podcast on Tuesday with Mike DeStefano. You want more? We are just nailing the Eichel trade stuff over at Locked On Sabres. If you want more on that, head over there.
Today on the Locked On Today podcast, Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Milwaukee Bucks stop Kevin Durant and the Brooklyn Nets from sending them packing. Get more of the sports news you need in less time with the Locked On Today podcast. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. Thanks for listening to the Locked On NHL podcast today with Joe DiBiase and Gil Martin. Talk to you on Tuesday.